This is the Jabberjaw Podcast Network.
What is up? Oh my God, can you believe it? 2017, that sounds like the future or something, but it's now. It is today. Happy New Year, my sinners. Thank you again for joining me on another episode of Lead Singer Syndrome, the first edition of 2017, and a great episode. I speak to my very old friend and my very dear friend, Mr. Mark Rose, formerly of Spitalfield, now doing a bunch of solo stuff. And I just hung out with him for 5 days straight between Christmas and New Year's on my own solo headline tour with my project River Oaks. It went off without a hitch. Spencer, my friend who was working for me, said it was the most flawless tour he's ever been a part of. It really was super, super easy and super, super rewarding. I mean, I've never done that, just gotten up on stage. I was playing like an hour and 15, hour and 20 minutes myself, and just singing and playing, and it was so much fun, so rewarding. Thank you so much. I know that a lot of sinners came out, so thank you guys for coming out, supporting me. I hope you had a good time, because I really did. Anyways, back to Mark. He's doing solo stuff for a while now. He was giving me a little advice, some tips. He's awesome, and I don't know if you guys remember Spitalfield. They broke up a while ago now. It has been a lot of years. But when I was getting ready to do this and I was listening back to the old Spitalfield records, man, they still hold up. Some of those songs are awesome. So we talk about the legacy of Spitalfield. We talk about Victory Records. We talk about the demise of the band. And of course, we talk about what Mark's doing now. Before we jump into that, I'm a New Year's resolution kind of dude. And last year, if you guys have been listening since then, just for a whole year, if you have been, thank you very much. If you went back and checked it out, also very cool. Last year, I made 2 New Year's resolutions. The first one I did, the second one I didn't do. So the first one I did was I was going to go the whole month of January without drinking any alcohol. And I did it just fine. I didn't have a single drop, a single sip of alcohol for the whole month of January. February was another story, but January, I was completely sober, and it was really, really good for me. But the second one was to get in good shape, and I find myself now, starting off 2017, not exactly too stoked on my health, and so that is going to be my New Year's resolution this year. And I stepped on the scale today, and I weighed 176 pounds, which is the most I've ever weighed. So my goal is to lose 16 pounds and be at 160 pounds, which I think is pretty doable. And the reason I'm giving you specifics, the reason that I'm saying this on the record, is because if I say, okay, I'm 176 pounds and I want to be 160 pounds, that's accountability right there. So every week I'm going to be like, I'm going to give you my number. Don't worry, I'm not going to talk like this at great lengths about it, but I will have some accountability from my sinners, and so I think that'll help me achieve my goal. Also, I want to hear about your New Year's resolutions. You can feel free to email me, send me a tweet. If you're part of the All Access Club, and you should be, we have a great forum on there for discussions. So if you signed up for the All Access Club, which is, by the way, leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess, and you're not on the Facebook group, make sure you figure that out, because we have some amazing discussions. I think we already have like 75 replies to the New Year's resolution conversation. So there's a lot of cool stuff ongoing on there. Of course, we talk about the podcast. We talk about music. We talk about bands. We talk about everything. So if you've got $6 a month, you can sign up for the All Access Club, be a part of that. Get some cool stuff in the mail for a couple bucks more. And of course, there's bonus episodes. Already did one bonus episode, which was awesome. There's more coming. There's going to be a Q&A with me in probably a couple days. I'm about to announce that. And a whole bunch of other stuff. So please, again, check out the All Access Club. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/allaccess. If you want to get in touch with me, leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter at leadsingersyn, S-Y-N, Instagram at leadsingersyndrome. So yeah, if you have suggestions for the show, feedback for me of any kind, feel free to hit me up. I always love hearing from you guys. All right, well, let's jump into it. Here's my conversation with Mr. Mark Rose, formerly of Spitalfields.
Everything is well and dying now. When it burns, it takes the feeling out. Tonight is gonna turn itself around. Everything is well and dying now. Well and dying now. Well and dying now.
We can be conversational like this. I'm here with my very good friend, my very old friend, Mr. Mark Rose.
Hello, buddy.
How are you?
I'm marvelous. I've been hanging with you for 4 or 5 days, so I'm better than I was before those 4 or 5 days.
Oh, well, that's a big compliment. That's a very sweet thing to say. We have had a good time,
yeah,
haven't we? We've done, for the listeners just finding out about this, because I've been telling everybody on my podcast that I'm going on a little solo tour for River Oaks, and today is the last show. We're in New York City, backstage at Webster Hall. And yeah, it's really been a lot of fun. I've learned a lot about myself. And it's kind of funny because, you know, you come from the same place that I came from, being basically fronting a band.
Yep.
You know, and then now to trying a solo thing, except you've done this for much, much longer.
That is correct.
A time. So I guess my first question for you is, how was that transition? I mean, I'm sure you get that question literally every interview, but it is an important question.
Yeah, you know, I would say that the transition itself, while it was a natural thing for me to want to keep playing songs that I've written on stage in front of people, that was natural. But the, you know, the slight stylistic change and maybe the you know, I don't know, the things that go along with not having a band behind you, you know, that took some time. That took some adjustment for not just me, but for people that had followed me with the band.
Yeah.
Because I would say that some of those people were growing up with me and were excited to be a part of that next chapter. And some of those other folks were maybe just hoping for more, you know, I don't know, part two, you know, Spitalfield part two, which just really wasn't happening. Even though it was my voice and it was my songwriting, it just wasn't that, you know, it was such a departure. Yep. And I'd say that after having done a variety of different types of tours while I was, you know, playing either with just an acoustic guitar or with a trio or with a full band, like a 5 or 6 piece band, and doing a couple EPs totally independently where I'm like messing with sounds and, you know, beats or an actual drummer or shakers and, you know, not a lot of percussion. I did all these different things, and somehow I've now kind of recentered to say, this sounds like me now. But at first it didn't sound like me, I don't think, even though it was my voice.
So it took you a little while to kind of find your sea legs.
Yeah,
in
which
terms
is weird.
Of what you wanted to do after Spitalfields.
Exactly, because it's weird to think that, like, after you tour for, you know, 6, 7 years, that you would need to find your sea legs, you know what I mean?
Right.
But you do. And I noticed, like, from the very beginning on our first night together, how you mentioned you were, like, you know, backstage warming up and feeling nervous and all this stuff. And
very
it's,
nervous,
and it's
yeah.
such, you know, I mean, I totally get you, but I think people that, you know, don't come from this same space would say, like, what would you be nervous about? You're
right.
Going out to perform.
I've played 2,000 shows with Silverstein.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're playing in front of people who care about you and your music.
Sure.
So it's not as if you're about to walk out and open for Rick Springfield, you know.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah. I mean,
I want to see what's going on. I don't want to just go just for the show. He's great, I'm sure. I want to see what he's doing backstage.
Oh.
I bet he's getting wild, that man.
I would think so. I mean,
even at his age.
Yeah. I mean, he was essentially himself, right? On Californication?
Like, I think so. I think, like, yeah.
I mean, that might just be him.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I forgot he was on that show.
Well, it's like a parody of himself, but also played by him, so... You know what I mean? It's like when you look like your own caricature, you know, you're like, well, you should look like your own caricature, but then you become the caricature. I don't know. It's just
well,
one
like
of those
there's
things.
People like that in like the, you know, the pub media or whatever. Like my favorite would be like Charles Barkley.
Perfect.
Who, you know, cause he's got to know Like, he's got to be perpetuating his own stereotype.
For sure.
He's got to know.
Yeah.
But I feel like he's just like that.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And he's one of those people that I think no matter how much, you know, like fame or money he has, it comes to a point where...
Yeah, thank you.
It comes to a point where he's like...
Beer just
like,
got delivered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Looking good.
No, you got Tecates.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have one. You want one?
Yeah, let's have one.
All right.
You got to get that sound. You got to mic that.
Oh, okay.
Well, mic mine.
Oh, I'll give you that one.
Right,
actually, I'll take that one.
Okay.
And you can see what it sounds like all mic'd up. This is an original Tecate, apparently.
Very good. Here it comes. Such an awkward silence as we tried.
We might have broke the recorder, but it's okay.
It's still going?
It's still going.
Good.
These things are indestructible.
You know who else is still going is Charles Barkley. He was actually doing, you know, like those like deodorant commercials and stuff. Like, you know, I think he was like one of those like spokespeople that like was already like, yeah, if I'm going to do this, I'd like to be wearing a safari hat and I'd like to be like, you know, doing ridiculous things just because he doesn't really need, you know, the money or the fame. So it's kind of like may as well have fun with it.
I think so. But I was watching this documentary about the Dream Team. You know, the 92 original Dream Team.
Yeah.
And them interviewing him even back then as a fairly young player. I'm not sure how old he was in 92. He was probably young. In the middle of his career, kind of, or maybe middle to early of his career. He was just as ridiculous and just as a character, like, just as big a personality back then.
Almost, yeah. Oh, like, open Hawaiian shirt, like, you know, coming off the bus with everybody screaming and, like, I don't know, he was hilarious.
Exactly. So... I'm not sure how we started talking about Charles Barkley, but I'm sure
people who are like who they are, but they're like parodies of themselves. That's
exactly. And how many like with your transition now into solo thing, and you've been doing it for so long, have the Spitalfield fans sort of waned and waned and waned to where they're fewer and further between now than the Mark Rose fans, or is it still a lot of people coming out being like, you know, remember Right Now was when I first heard you, or the Victory Records days?
Yeah. I find that when I do my own shows, it's probably more like 75% folks who follow what I currently do that maybe got into the band after the fact or went backwards to find it. And there still are some of those that, you know, have been, you know, hanging around since the old days that will come out. And of course they want to hear, you know, a couple old songs that'd be make them happy. But what's interesting is that it really is depending on who I'm paired with when I'm out doing, if it's like a co-bill or if I'm supporting somebody, you'll find more of the older fans coming out of the woodwork for the right show. Whereas like, you know, if I pass through New York three times a year, it really depends on who I'm playing with. You know what I mean? Or like what the ticket price is. Like these are like factors that actually determine who's coming to see me specifically. Cause some people are like, oh man, like for like tonight, there's like how many folks that might be crossovers that are like Shane and Mark are together. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But then like, I would say that like the majority of the folks that are seeing you on this tour, like they may or may not know anything about Spitalfield. Some of them do. Cause if I say, hey, I used to play in this band, which, you know, we toured, you know, you get a few cheers, you get some people singing along, busting out their phones, but it's not like, you know, it's not a Spitalfield tour at all. You know,
no.
It's like, it'd be different if I did that. I've never done that. I could do that. That'd be fun. You know, to do like a specifically like, I don't know, Remembering Right Now acoustic tour where I just play all those old songs and like people could come out and have nostalgia.
Sure.
You know,
I mean, you could do that as a set and then you could do another set with your, you know,
right.
With the MR stuff, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, you know, that's another idea. And, you know, we're jumping around a little bit, but like, you know, I'm starting to think more as a musician that when you go on tour and you're like, oh, you do three, you know, New York three times a year or whatever. And Silverstein, we do New York maybe at least three times a year. You got to be doing different things. You got to be switching up what people are coming just in terms of entertainment.
Yes.
You know, and when I didn't really ever think about that until we did our, you know, Discovering the Waterfront anniversary tour and realized, oh, this is like kind of an event now.
Right.
And now doing this tour with River Oaks, it's the same thing. Like people are coming out and it's a totally different. Some of the same songs, you know, like My Heroine is, I'm still playing it, but it's different. So yeah, it gives people another reason to come out. So is that something you would consider doing?
Yeah.
Doing some kind of like a Spitalfield?
It'd be fun.
Acoustic tour?
I mean, why not? I mean, my thought is this, and maybe I'm different than other folks who have come from being in a band to doing solo stuff, but I don't get annoyed at all by people calling out for old songs or posting about that kind of thing online, being like commenting. If I'm like making a post about like new music from me and then somebody comments like something about the band or wanting to hear one of those songs, it doesn't bother me because, number one, I'm like, the fact that anybody cared about any music I've written is awesome. But
sure.
But then also I'm kind of like, you know, I look at my favorite, like, you know, songwriters or career musicians and bands and stuff. They've spanned so much time that I'm like, you know, I'm like, if I can be writing great music into my mid-30s and late-30s and whatnot, like, that's great. And, of course, there's always going to be that, like, nostalgia versus what was, you know, I mean, I don't know. Like, people like to talk about, well, you know, it's never going to be as good as this or whatever. And I'm thinking, like, you're battling with nostalgia in your head because if you have an artist that you're really a fan of, you should be excited for what they're doing next, right? So I kind of like don't get mad at all about it. I'm like, let me prove to you what I can do now. And if you don't like it, that's cool. But like, thanks for caring at any point.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the choice to form a solo, you know, act rather than being when Spitalfield dissolved or whatever. Why was that a choice? Why didn't you just say, I'm going to get a couple guys from other bands that I respect or I like, that I think I can collaborate with? Why that choice to go solo and not just start another band?
Yeah, I think I'd say maybe the top reason would be that when we called it quits, I was really frustrated that we were ending the way we were ending. And it's not because of anything like musically, and it wasn't because of anything within the band about, you know, caring about each other or not wanting to be in the van with each other anymore. It was really about being in a spot where you feel like you're up against the wall and you're trapped, right? So I almost felt like first thing I want to do is take a break for a few months, clear my head.
Sure.
Next thing I want to do is start writing songs again and like kind of pull the rug out and see what happens. So even though I wanted to like have that, you know, camaraderie again, I also kind of wanted to be alone for a little bit. Like I wanted to like not check in with anybody, not bounce ideas off anybody, just go at it, you know? And I wrote a bunch of songs with, you know, just a guitar, just a piano. And even though I had written songs like that before, it had never, ever been not for the band. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it had always been with the band in mind. And this time it wasn't. It was like, this is for me, you know, and I don't really have to answer to anybody about anything.
But did you really have to answer to anybody in Spitalfield? Because you were pretty much the, I mean, didn't you write all the songs anyways?
Well, I would say that maybe I wrote the majority. Like I was definitely like the key songwriter, but I think our sound was reflective of everybody's input, and the pushing and pulling that we did is what made us who we were. Because if I had, you know, I mean, I'm sure if you ask the other guys, they might be like, oh yeah, man, like, you know, I was a tyrant. But it's like, I don't think I was, because I wanted the things that made them who they were, I wanted that to shine through with us.
Right.
And when we'd make a record or whatever, it was like, sure, a lot of the songs or lyrics or things that I had written, but it was still a collective effort. And like, I don't know, maybe even to a point where there's certain things I maybe should have been like a little bit more like, no, like, let's not do that or whatever. But I felt pretty open about letting guys shine a little bit with what they liked, because it's important to make people happy.
It is. And I've definitely been accused of being the tyrant. Mm. And it's something I'd say as the band has gone on, I've relinquished my control a little bit. I've become like less of a control freak, but I almost feel like every band needs to have at least one, maybe two.
Sure.
But they can't have five.
Right.
You know what I mean? You have to have a couple guys steering the ship, or maybe only one guy steering the ship, and he has to be... What did Cameron Webb, our producer, used to say? That I had a strong vision.
Right.
That's what he used to say about me.
Sure.
That I kind of knew what I wanted. I knew what... there was an idea, I knew how to do it. And that can rub people the wrong way.
Whoa, no doubt. I mean, think of it this way. What about, like, if you have any kind of, like, collective, whether it's like, you know, back to sports, whether it's a team or it's in music where you've got songwriters within the band and then you've got more like musicians that are like players within the band. It's like the bands that, that last the longest and have the probably the best run are those that kind of find their roles and know how to deal with each other, right?
Yeah.
Because it is, I'm sure it's tough if you are a role player, but you wish you weren't, right? If you wish you had right. more, you had more say in X, Y, and Z. And I think some of those folks, if they can sprinkle in some of what they care about and they love playing and they love touring and they love the band, then you're all good. But if you have role players that, you know, are secretly angry that they're not doing their own thing, then that's where the split happens.
Well,
right?
The band that I think of is another Chicago band, is Fall Out Boy.
Yeah.
Because they were the band that had that element perfectly, where Pete was the guy.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the singer of the band. He wasn't the front man, but he kind of was
in his own way.
Personality and in how he managed, ran the band. But then all those other guys really knew where their role was.
Yeah.
You know, Patrick as the songwriter, Joe and Andy Beast basically being like, being content with trusting those guys creatively and adding themselves just as great players.
Right.
And that's a band that stayed together with four members. You know what I mean? Well, they broke up for a while, but whatever. You know what I mean?
Right. But even that was important. And that maybe, sure. And I think that, like, you know, some groups would just take, you know, 3, 4, 5 years between an album and take some time off. You know, they instead went on a hiatus. And I almost think that was kind of one of those things that may have been part of the plan anyway, which was like,
I kind of wonder we'll be stronger
when we come back. Yeah. And like, it creates, I mean, they were, I think when they went on their hiatus, they had just finished being a direct support act to Blink-182. And I think that at that point they realized, we have gotten as far as we can get in this world, like doing what we're doing right now. And now we need to go away and express ourselves in other ways, other business ventures, other music ventures,
sure, families.
Yeah, all that stuff. You figure your stuff out. You know, Patrick does a solo record. Joe starts a metal band. You know what I mean? Or Joe and Andy, right? So it's like, I think that was important, you know, and that makes them better. They're a great example when you talk about those role players, and not only from everything you said, but I would say that because Spitalfield and Fall Out Boy were trying to tour together before either of us had recording contracts or booking agents, I've seen that from the very beginning, and I've seen Pete Wentz be a very smart business guy early on when we knew nothing about business at all. Like when we knew nothing, like he was kind of cutting edge with stuff, almost to a point where you'd be like, whoa, like it may make you feel uncomfortable. But then you realize how kind of, you know, brilliant it was. You know what I mean? Like, it's
Yeah. It almost was like it almost seemed, I don't want to say shady, but it was just that he was so far ahead in terms of business mind at that point than anyone else.
Yeah.
Like, I just remember, like, you know, we toured with Fall Out Boy early, and I know you guys did back in the day too. Did all kinds of stuff with Fall Out Boy growing up in the same scene. But they really were always next level, and it was all Pete. And the band was content with that. But back to you, and you know, you saying, oh, maybe I was a bit of a tyrant, was being the tyrant of the band, and then now I'm really just putting words in your mouth, but having that, whether it was how far you were, you know, on that level, was that something that you hated so much or dreaded so much, that dynamic in the band, that was part of why you just decided, I'm going to write these songs, I'm going to sing them myself, record them myself, because then you didn't have to worry about someone being like, well, Mark's an asshole because he said play this note, and I, you know, and I want to play this note, and, you know, or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to say no, because I think that maybe like a better word than tyrant would be like more like a phrase like mom and dad, because maybe it's more like trying to keep everything, you know, keep everyone happy, keep things together, you know, get through the harder stuff with like, this is how we can handle this, you know, go through the best times being like proud and excited for everybody. You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I kind of think that maybe is more the role. So when it comes to like the studio and stuff, I think that I was learning and growing too, because going from a band that started as sophomores in high school and doing 4-track recordings and everything like that to eventually getting into a studio, like a real studio for the first time, I think it was a shock to everybody, like what that looked like and felt like to try to be more of a professional musician. So from record to record, I think they raised their bar as well.
Yeah.
And I think that you know, we made our favorite records together, you know what I mean? Like, as we went along, even though, like, from a fan standpoint, it might be like, oh, we like the first one best or whatever. That just happens, I guess. But
that always just happens. Yeah. That's, I mean, my favorite Saves the Day record, and I play one of the songs on this tour, is their first record, Can't Slow Down.
Mm-hmm.
People have, someone called me an idiot once. That's your favorite record? You're an idiot. It's like, well, sorry, it's my opinion, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's how I feel. I'm not, maybe the other records are superior, but to me, just that's the one I heard first. That's the record to me. It was like Lifetime, but better, you know, like that record, it changed the way I thought about punk rock.
Yeah.
And it will always be my favorite. Do I think it's the best in terms of the recording or the songs or the, you know, the performances? Maybe not.
Right.
But it's my favorite. And that, you know, that's a whole other discussion.
But, I would almost like say, like, in that mindset, what you're really getting at is that there's a certain level of, I don't know, authenticity and where it's like when it hit you, it mattered so much, and now it can still hold up with you. And like, that's important because there are some records that I think hit me and changed me that in retrospect maybe don't hold up as well. And then there's some that I like more that maybe I kind of missed the boat on. You know what I mean? Where I'm like, oh man, that was a lot cooler than I realized. Or
yeah. Well, when bands go away and they come back, well, first of all, that's a great career move. Any bands listening? Break up and come back.
Right. That's Spitalfield has not come back yet. That we took too long.
That's a question I'm going to get to in a second. But,
okay.
But you know, I do think though that the quality of music and that longevity does make a difference when a band comes back. And last night we played in Philadelphia, and that band Valencia did a reunion show where they had 2,600 people.
That's right.
Which they would have never done when they were together. Like,
right.
They were maybe worth like 500 or 800, I'd say, in Philly. I could be wrong. Maybe they were bigger, but you know what I mean? It's just amazing that this band comes back, and that probably speaks to, one, nostalgia, two, the fact that their music's probably held up.
Right.
You know,
right.
In terms of what people took away from it and what it means to them now.
Yeah,
and that's a big thing.
And, you know, because music is absolutely everywhere, and it's, you know, I mean, it's with everything being free on Spotify, YouTube, etc., there's like a flood of music, right? Now, that's probably the best problem ever, because music's awesome and we all love it. But it's also like, man, like, it's hard to cut through. You know what I mean? It's hard to like keep someone's attention, you know, if they're checking it out for the first time, or, you know, new listeners are making playlists instead of listening to albums. Like, I get it, and I'm not mad about it. But, you know, to your point, somebody like Valencia, who, those albums matter to those fans. You know what I mean? Those moments matter. They can cut through with something like, we're coming together to play in our hometown. And not only that, then it starts to snowball. It's like, you know what I mean? Like, because like 2,500 people or 2,600 people, that's a lot. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot by any measure.
A lot of people.
That's a lot for like a top 40 band. You know what I mean? Like, that's a lot in general. So they cut through with that.
Yep. No, it's not. Well, there's another Shane. I don't like this. I want to be the older
right,
Shane.
Right,
I mean, back to Spitalfield. You say you guys have not done it. Have not done a reunion. Have not done any reunion.
No, we played some shows. We've not, you know, written any music or made any plans. Like, that's kind of where it's at. Like, when 2013 was getting ready to knock on the door, and we're looking at, you know, especially
the
when
10 year of remembering right now,
right?
Remember right now. Sorry, I know the title.
No, it's good. That was like almost my, I mean, I was really excited to like reconnect with those guys, because it's not that we completely, you know, went our separate ways and fell off and didn't ever talk, because I, you know, I still lived pretty close to JD, and like we would, you know, we're in the same neighborhood. We'd see each other out and about. We'd have a beer. We'd chat. And we never were not friends. You know what I mean? Like, we always stayed friends. But then the other guys that were a little bit further out, or then like TJ is, you know, across the country in another, you know, area altogether. I was just like, if these guys are down, I will take care of this. Mom and dad's back. You know what I mean? Like, I will make this happen in a way that everybody's comfortable, because maybe the demand was there to do like a full US thing, which would have been awesome. But instead we narrowed it down to like, what can people really do with their lives and their families and jobs and everything else? So we nailed it with like a 2 weeks in the Midwest and Northeast and a few fly-ins for the West Coast and call it a day and like play a couple festivals and stuff. And it was fun. And what I will say, and then, I mean, maybe it's not even something that people really like want to hear, or maybe it's too much insight. I don't know. But like when we were on those dates together, we're, you know, back in the van hanging out, it was like we never skipped a beat because we're, you know, bringing up all the old inside jokes. We're cracking up. We're having fun. You know, at the shows, we're drinking beers together, hugging, having a good time on stage. We're like, we're grinning ear to ear. But at no point during that trip did we ever be like, you know, we should probably just give this another shot.
Right.
We never talked about it. It never came up. Not even like in just after a few shots.
In your head, were you thinking about it?
Not really. It was almost like, this is exactly what it needs to be right now, which is like, we're out here to have fun, to reconnect with a lot of people we haven't seen in a long time, to play shows like, you know, that we, you know, again, I'd been playing music, but some of those guys had been, you know, maybe playing in bands or playing out locally a little bit, but to be back in the van and back out there, you know, again, I've been doing it for a little bit, but they haven't, you know.
Well, it might be better that that's what you did, because so many bands have done the reunion, have had these great big shows, have obviously just enjoyed it so much, become bands again.
We're back, baby.
And then you watch as each show, each tour, few less people come, few less people care.
Right.
And then by the end, it's like you're back to where you were, but worse.
Because you're...
Do you know what I mean?
Because
you ride that high, and then the high fades away. Because
you're trying to get back into new music. And once you're into new music, then you have to start reinventing, right? Reimagining. And you can't rely on the nostalgia. You can't rely on people that were excited to watch your reunion show and like, you know, or an anniversary show and have beers and let loose. You can't rely on them to be there for when you release your new EP.
And also creatively and personality wise, that's when you start having to, you know, confront each other's personalities and each other's,
Totally.
You know, do you know what I mean? That's when it's like, well, we're working on a song now. Like, I don't agree with you.
Right.
That's where the conflict arises.
And why
wouldn't
you pick back up with the same issues you had when you put it down? I mean, like that, you know, maybe people have changed. I mean, there might be some things.
I'm sure there are. And there are bands that break up for a reason. Like, there was an incident.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Right. And then over time, sometimes people do get over that.
Right.
You know what I mean? And every situation is different.
Right.
But, you know, I mean, I'm a little surprised I don't see Spitalfield popping up around Christmas time or around, like, summertime and, oh, you know, Riot Fest.
Right.
You know, and kind of, you know, you guys could kind of chase the money, you know, for lack of a better term. I mean, obviously, it's not just about money, but there is probably significant offers out there. I don't know. Have you gotten
offers
to play certain things? Just couldn't figure it out getting everybody from around the country.
Right.
And
together? I think it's also being maybe a little bit selective on it, just because, I mean, yeah, the opportunities, like, there's been some good ones, and we've taken a couple of cool ones, but I think that let me backtrack. I can't speak for everybody, but I'll speak for me and say that I never want to rule out us getting on stage and playing music, because it's fun, and I care about those guys, and those songs matter to me because they were a big part of me, you know? So, like, I'm never going to rule that out. And especially if it's the right opportunity or the right time and there's a demand, then hell yeah, that's fun. But I also think that because we're not really looking to like make new music together and stuff, that we're not really looking for that angle that to be like, yeah, we're going to just like make this happen now. You know what I mean? We're going to milk it and then make it happen. It's like, I don't think anybody wants it. Like, we don't want that. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't want to become kind of like a band that's always playing, because then it's like, I don't know, loses something. You know what I mean? Like, at least for us, it would lose something. So we'll see. And you know what? Like, on a related note, I've been thinking a lot about, like, man, I haven't, like, written a rock record in a long time, and I want to. And people are kind of like, you know, oh, like, great, like, you know, get the band back together, just do another record, you know, your fans will love it or whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they would, number one. And number two, I don't know if I want to, like, make that a Spitalfield record. Like, maybe I should, like, you know, do a rock record with some other folks and like try something different. You know what I mean? Like,
well,
that'd be fun.
To be honest, and I can't believe you just said that, because it was like you read my mind. I just said to you, you know, I was about to say to you, can't Mark Rose exist as Mark Rose and also Mark Rose in another band?
Right.
Like, what's stopping you from like you know, I was going to ask you about Enter Sandman because you're doing Enter Sandman cover.
Yeah.
The first guitar riff you ever learned to play. And it was one of the first guitar riffs I ever learned to play, too.
I think it's a common thing.
And, you know, obviously, maybe you just fuck. Like, maybe you miss cranking up a 412 and chugging and playing some heavier music with somebody. You could do that.
Yeah.
You could exist in a lot of different musical realms if you wanted to.
Yeah.
Make a rock record, whatever. So that's kind of what I'm saying to you. Like, your solo thing is, because it's all you, you're allowed to do as much as you want,
right,
or as little as you want, right? And you can never break up your solo project, can you?
That's the thing. I keep telling people that. I'm like, I can't break up with myself. So No. I mean, you're very right. And I would say that I've maybe had some like hang-ups and some issues about like, you know, I don't know, like starting another band or like getting guys together as like a collective of some kind. And I've been like kind of fighting with that in my brain for a while now, because I guess I have a hard time not going all in on something. And maybe I should be better about that, because if I could allow myself to like have a couple different projects that are like a little bit more low key, a little bit less full commitment, you never know what might catch for what reason. And then your life changes a little bit. Like, I don't know, maybe I'm afraid of that. Like, I'm afraid of like what it would be like to actually have a band again and to be accountable for, you know, taking care of business. But you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
I'm afraid of that stuff. Cause right now I have kind of an easy path of like, you're in control, you know,
yeah,
at least of your time away and the amount of rehearsing you do and the amount of writing you do and when you feel inspired and not answering to anybody.
We have to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor Loot Crate, but we will be right back. So as you probably know by now, I am a total geek when it comes to pop culture, quoting movies, retro video games. I was just driving around my neighborhood playing Pokemon Go, trying to catch Bulbasaurs and Charmanders because they're hot right now. I got Mario Run. I'm all premium on there. So yeah, I am deep. I couldn't get a Nintendo Classic. That bummed me out. Really wanted one of those for Christmas. I will get one though. But I've been working with this awesome company called Loot Crate, and they are amazing. They're sending me boxes every month. So if you're on a quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate brings you between 4 and 6 of the coolest curated mystery items every single month straight to your doorstep. It's the best surprise you know is coming. Our next Crate's theme is Origins. We have awesome and exclusive items from your old school favorites. This January, see where it all started and explore the iconic origins with historic items featuring Superman, Captain America, Mario, I love Mario, and the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, including, as always, our monthly t-shirt and pin. They've been really cool with the packages lately. I posted a few of the boxes up on Instagram, so check out just to get a feel for the kinds of things they put in the boxes if you're not, but I'm really, really enjoying it. Anyways, here's how it works. So you have until the 19th, January 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and you get this month's crate. But when the cutoff happens, it's over, that's it. So make sure you're all in there before the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific. So make sure you head over to lootcrate.com/leadsinger, enter the promo code leadsinger, and you'll save $3 off any new subscription. And they have a whole bunch of other things too, if you're more into specific stuff like the anime they have. It's all really, really rad. So again, the link is lootcrate.com/leadsinger and enter the promo code leadsinger. We have to talk a little bit about Victory Records as well. As some of the listeners know, both Silverstein and Spitalfield were on Victory Records. We got signed at just about the exact same time.
Yep.
We were on the sampler CDs together. You know,
Billy was rocking a Bulls shirt. That's one of the first things I remember.
He was rocking a Bulls shirt.
Because before we even met you guys, I was like, oh, dude, he's rocking a Bulls shirt. We're going to get along just fine.
And we did. I don't know how candidly you want to speak about your time with Spitalfield on Victory, being a local band, because Victory is a Chicago label, you guys being from Chicago.
Yeah.
How that all shook out, I mean, and how much of that contributed to the demise of the band?
Yeah. Well, I'll start by saying that when we were like, you know, like finishing up high school and getting ready to go, you know, to college and, you know, start finding some jobs and stuff, you know, we started to realize how badly we wanted to be doing the band full time. And at that point, we had been like, you know, playing out regionally and rehearsing a lot and writing a lot. But we, you know, had done this local deal with this label, Sinister Label, out of Chicago, that helped us put out this EP and, you know, a full length before that. But the thing about Sinister Label is they weren't...
Was that
Bakta? Yeah, Mike Bakta and Craig Zomchek. And yeah, Bakta's around, man. Yeah. He's kicking it. What was great about Sinister Label is that they were actively like pushing us to springboard and to go do something bigger.
Yeah.
And we straight up, you know, had a friend take promo photos of us that we, you know, printed ourselves at whatever, you know, print shop, wrote a bio poorly for about ourselves, included the EP, a list of accomplishments. You know what I mean? Like, these are things that have happened for us. And like, you know, I mean, looking back, it's funny stuff, but like at the time it was so important to us.
Yeah.
And we straight up in, you know, manila envelopes mailed out snail mail, like 14 packages now to like labels that we were like, these are labels that have bands we like. And these are labels that maybe would listen. I don't know. And like, I don't know, a bunch of them got back to us shockingly, which was crazy.
Yeah.
And then Victory was one of them. And I remember I was sitting in class at Columbia in Chicago, cause I was going to Columbia for music composition. And I was in one of my classes and my super old school flip phone rang with a 312 number that's not in my phone. And I didn't answer. And we had break. It was like a 3-hour class once a week kind of class.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a break and I went out and listened to the voicemail and it was Tony, you know, straight up calling my phone.
The owner of Victory, yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't go back into class. I couldn't. I was like, this is everything right now. Like, you know, just as far as like,
You don't still have that voicemail, do you?
No, I should have recorded it.
Did you call him back right away?
No, I want to talk to JD first. I wanted to call Dan. I wanted to call TJ. You know what I mean? I was like,
what did he say?
Well, everybody was like, whoa, like what? like wants to talk to us, wants to meet us. And like, we didn't even realize after we did call back, I didn't realize, I mean, I knew they were in Chicago, of course. That was very evident. We, you know, grew up, you know, in Chicago, but we didn't realize how close to Victory we were living. It was like JD and I had an apartment together that was like walkable and like, but we'll come by tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I don't know.
Right.
So the thing is that we narrowed it down to a few labels, and, you know, they want to send some people out to see us. We played this show at Metro that we were, you know, it was Movie Life headlining with Brand New supporting them. And then Spitalfield was like the Chicago band opening up the show.
Crazy.
And we brought like a good 200-300 people cause we were starting to get a little thing going.
Yeah.
And the show was like well attended. It was fun. And we were up there just like, you know, playing as hard as we've ever played, freaking out. Cause there's all these people watching that like are watching us in a different way.
Yep.
And yeah, when we ended up signing with Victory, I would say that like, we had never been more, you know, excited, driven, I don't know, like feeling like this is our chance. You know what I mean? Like we have to take this. We have to put everything else on hold. We have to do this like all in right now.
Yeah.
So we did, you know what I mean? Like we like, you know, 6 months in, we're like not renewing our lease. We're moving home so that we can have, you know, we can have the van and trailer parked somewhere safely where we don't have to pay rent anymore. And like, I'm moving back in to hit the road. You know what I mean?
Right,
it's like,
right.
It's not like, oh, you got signed and now you've got your own place. It's like, no, it's the other way around.
Yeah.
I'm going backwards to go forward.
It's funny.
So pumped. Right. But anyway, your question initially, rather than going on a full timeline, your question about Victory, I would say that like, it's one of the most common things I get asked, but also one of the hardest things to talk about because I don't like to think of like, you know, bands the same way people think of like products where it's like, well, this band, this product was better than this product and it should have sold more at these locations. You know what I mean? Like, or this thing should have been that. It's tough because it's so case by case. And then you've got so much life happening with each individual member. And then if you have a manager or an agent and then you have the label and there's so many different egos in line and there's different levels of business savvy. There's different levels of like knowledge, you know, about how to get stuff done, how to get it done right. And I think that like they gave us an incredible opportunity considering, you know, again, there weren't that many Chicago bands on the label yet. There were about to be. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there were
a whole bunch. There were about to be a whole bunch. But like there weren't yet. And, you know, it was like they don't, they've been more known for like the heavier stuff, you know, all the way back from like, of course, when yeah. I was younger, it was, you know, Strife and Earth sure. Crisis and stuff, but then into like Hatebreed kind of like crossing over into the bigger level. Right. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then Thursday and Taking Back Sunday and all this. So we're kind of,
well,
like,
it was kind of like the way I viewed their, what they were trying to do with you guys was they had a radio department.
Right.
Remember, Tim,
yep.
And a couple other guys, like they had like three people in a radio department, which is ridiculous for an independent label.
Right.
Because they had two guys, I think, working commercial radio.
Yeah.
And they basically weren't getting any commercial radio.
Right.
They weren't getting any.
Right.
But it was something I think that Tony really wanted.
Yeah.
And I think the whole point of him signing your band is he wanted you to be the Jimmy Eat World.
Right.
Of, independent music, and he wanted to have that.
Yeah.
And I think that was a big thing. And yeah. I think that's where he saw you guys fitting in.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you guys saw yourselves fitting in that way at all.
I think that we were straddling that because, you know, that, you know, the band you're talking about, Jimmy Eat World, you know, one of my favorite bands, and like, you know, I mean, I could, no doubt, if people like heard some influence or thought like, oh man, they're kind of like slightly more pop emo rock version, or like pop punk emo rock version of like that. Like, yeah, for sure. I mean, mm-hmm. I totally see that. And yeah, that's a good point that they were definitely trying to expand, you know, into other realms.
Yes.
And that we could be someone that could kind of be in both worlds and maybe even break through if given the right opportunity. But that word I just said, opportunity, was probably one of the most crazy parts of everything that went with Victory, because there were a lot of opportunities for us. Like, we did get some really great tours, like some cool support tours, some good, you know, I don't know. We had a pretty decent amount of momentum, I should say, because
yeah.
it was kind of organic, because it didn't explode right away. It took some time. And like, Remember Right Now crawled to 10,000 copies, but then shotgunned up to 50. And then, you know what I mean? It was like, whoa, like things were starting to happen. Right.
Yeah.
So all that stuff is great behind the scenes. And I'm sure you could speak to some of it too. Man, there was some drama going on with like the way the business is being run, right? And part of that is not understanding what we were in for, not really having maybe the right kind of understanding and legal counsel to truly know what's going on and to maybe be taken advantage of. But then also, I'm never really that mad about things we signed that we didn't understand. I'm mad about things that are like not honored that are signed. Like, that's a problem for me.
Right.
And that was hard for me, especially when I'm like playing mom and dad in the band and trying to keep everybody happy, and no one can understand, including me, what's going on. So I'm trying to like be the voice of reason and try to be the connector and try to be the, like, you know, diffuse this situation.
Is there a specific thing that was not honored that you can remember?
Well, I mean, it just always seemed like things weren't adding up when it came down to like how we were going to pay our bills at the end of the day. Like, let me just say it that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, cause it's one thing to be on the road and to like, you know, have your merchandise and have your tour guarantees or whatever. And Lord knows when you're a first to four for $100, but you've got a van and trailer and a 6-man team. And, you know, I mean, you're losing money every night, even if you're like gaining fans and popularity.
Right.
So obviously you got to eat dirt. Like, I just wanted the dirt to like start to taste better when things were getting better.
Mm-hmm.
And that dirt didn't really taste better because you could home and realize like, man, like something's not right here. Like something's not right. And then not really getting the straight answers and getting, I don't know. I always felt like, and maybe this is like, I don't, you know, I'd hate to like say something I regret saying, but like, I would think that like when it came to business, somehow it got very personal. Right. But then when you come back as a person to talk about real people things, it'd get real business real quick.
And that is so interesting. That is, and I've had that thought in my head, but I've never been able to wrap my head around, you know what I mean? Like, able to put that together. It's so true.
Yeah. Right.
That is so true. And I've never really been able to equate that.
Yeah. And I think that might be a common theme for a lot of different artists that were at different points in their careers. But the main thing is that I always thought that the artists that were getting into the biggest public, like, you know, I don't know, quarrels or whatever, things going on, it's like we kind of stayed out of that. But part of that was because we maybe weren't at a level where that was something that would matter. You know what I mean? It was like,
sure.
You know what I mean? It was like, I noticed that, you know, a lot of the bigger issues and lawsuits and public things are happening with bands that are selling a lot of records and are on really, really big marquee type tours. And I'm like, well, we have some stuff going on too, but like, is that going to be how we get popular? Is that we're going to like use this? Like, no, I just couldn't bring myself to like want to fight.
I don't think it would work anyways.
No, and nor did I. I actually wanted it to work. Not the fighting part. I wanted it to work because I wanted to find a way to say, like, let's get past the things we disagree on and let's figure out how to take this next step together, separately, whatever. But that's when we got into a spot where we felt very up against a wall where we're like, okay, at the end of the day, we still love playing music. We want to play music. We want to be together. We want to write songs. We want to continue on and see if we can like relight a fire and get this thing going to the next level. Because again, you mentioned it earlier with like radio and stuff like that. We were always right on the, like knocking on the door of like really cool things happening. Like,
yeah,
that. But those opportunities for whatever reason, some of which I think are, avoidable and some of them are unavoidable. Those reasons kept us where we were. And when it came time to like deliver another record or get back into another album cycle and deal with what had just happened on the previous record and talk about how are we going to eventually, I don't know, own homes or have families, it would like got to a point where we just couldn't collectively do it. And I, like, yeah. I said at the very beginning, I knew I wanted to make music still. I was going to keep writing songs. But as a band, as an entity, it was like, this is what we have to do. We have to like essentially raise a white flag. And like,
so how was that? How did that decision come about? Was it you that kind of said to the other guys, look, I can't do this? Cause I don't remember anyone really quitting the band. Like maybe Louder, maybe quit,
right.
But like, it didn't seem like, you know, oh, it's like people start dropping like flies and then the next thing you know, it's only Mark left and then it's, you know what I mean?
Right,
it didn't
happen like 2.0 that. With it a whole new band, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like Mark and the Scabs. It wasn't like that, right? Like
no,
you
it
had,
wasn't.
You
we
had,
did.
I think pretty much everybody, didn't you?
No, well, we did. We had two lineup changes over the course of, you know, I don't know, a lot of time.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
And the most recent lineup change, which was Louder, came right as we released what was our final record. So it wasn't as if it was like, now we're doing a record without him. It's like, no, he was on all of the records, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't remember being the one to necessarily spearhead it, but I remember feeling like the pot was boiling over with like all the emotions and all the issues that we were dealing with. And it was like, we did have some new, stronger legal counsel at that time that was trying to make some things work and make some things happen for
yeah.
like a way to kind of solve the problems that we have, which maybe wouldn't be like,
well, is that that's either get money you're owed so you can continue as a band or get out. Is
and,
that kind of the,
well, even getting out would have been maybe something that had a, you know, kind of an upside for everybody if we could put the right terms in place, because again,
yeah.
there was still like some legitimate interest from, you know, different, you know, agencies and some other outlets and maybe labels, if you will, that were kind of like, well, we still love the band and what you guys are doing and we would be down to make something happen here, like whether it's a transitional thing or yeah. a buyout or a
uh-huh.
or a agree to disagree, like whatever. I mean, it would have been something. And all those options just weren't happening, and we just got to a point where we just couldn't put it together to deliver an album just to get out of something. Like, we couldn't do that. You know what I mean? Like, we couldn't say, let's just put everything we got after all this emotion too. We've been a band at that point for 9 years, almost 10 years. It's like,
yeah.
we couldn't just rally to do something we don't care about. You know what I mean? And we certainly didn't have the strength, I guess, anymore to like, just get out there and work it for a couple years and see what happens. Like that was
sure.
it, you know?
No, I get that. I dissolved Spitalfield, and then you started up your own thing. Did you
mm-hmm.
still owe Victory
mm-hmm.
music? Did you put stuff out? You didn't put anything out of Victory, though.
No, I mean, I followed what I was supposed to do, you know, as like a songwriter that was signed to the label. Like, you know, I mean, they weren't too interested in what I was doing in that way. So
okay.
that was cool. I mean, I was almost like, if they want this, that's actually totally fine, because that might be a nice platform for me to then step off of to what I do next.
Yeah.
Just as a way to like get a little, you know, I don't know, like a shoot out of a cannon a little bit, but like,
right.
I mean, I didn't really hear much and it didn't really matter. It was kind of like probably for the best.
Intentionally make some just like total dog shit demos. Like Mark can't sing at all anymore. What happened? He's like way out of key. And
this is kind of like Michael McDonald. I don't know what he's doing. Yeah. Well,
was that a racist song? We can't sign this.
I mean,
seriously, like that is an interesting thing. I wonder if a band's ever done that. Totally thrown a demo.
I believe so.
It must have happened.
It has to have happened. If not, just for fun, right. Just to see what happens. The thing is that, like, for as much like, again, I keep saying the word drama, and maybe I need to come up with, you know, get in the thesaurus, come up with some better words. But like, even with all that stuff, and with all the like miscommunications, miscues, missed opportunities, like. Really troubling stuff. Even with all that, when people are like, "Oh man, like you know, I've heard this or that about the label," I'm like, everything that you've heard, good, bad, ugly, it's probably all true because that's every record label. You know what I mean? Like if you were to talk about like you know, big like Atlantic Records or Capitol, look at the bands on those labels that like should have been bigger but weren't, or the bands that like got signed but broke up, or the ones that like got really huge and you're like, wait a minute, this band got big, and then it's, you know what I mean, that happens everywhere. Yeah. Not just on this particular thing. So it's like I never felt like we were owed, I mean, okay, we were owed something maybe more like on paper, but like I guess let me just say this might be my best summary I can come up with. I never think of it as what should have been. I think about like what maybe could have been.
Yeah.
Right? Because I don't know. There's.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
is there any one thing you can attribute to now looking back, like the, you know, cause there's obviously certain regrets. I mean, I have regrets and I'm still, you know, doing the same thing, but I still have regrets.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if I could really attribute it to one thing, I guess it would be not having a team that embraced each other as much and that worked together.
You mean because, like a management agent
and team? Label combo. Because,
label combo, yeah.
Because maybe we could have found some better fits collectively that would have been more effective and it had less problems and less drama about things that don't matter at all that somehow come back to us. You know what I mean? Like
absolutely.
Common agents, common management people, you know, issues happening that just seem so far removed from the band and like from us as people, yet somehow are so directly impacting like decisions that are being made.
Right.
Like that, that would be my biggest thing would be like maybe get more of a backbone about like saying this is working, this isn't, and like getting that dialogue way more out front because maybe we let it build up a little too much.
I totally get it. We spent a lot of time talking about Victory, which is great. Well, so many. Do you got any funny stories? Do you have any funny anecdotes at the moment you can share?
There's always funny anecdotes. I guess like, well, I'm trying to think of like something that really is relevant and funny versus something that's just old and funny because there's a lot of old stories. But real quick, I was going to say though. Again, on that topic we were just talking about, I feel probably a little more comfortable now talking about it, like not only this far removed from it all, but talking to someone like you about it because it's like I totally, you know, I don't know, like I understand that we have a lot of things in common and then a lot of things that, you know, like that we've been through collectively that, again, every band is different, every situation is different, but it's like I feel like I'm, you know, able to
relax
a little bit more because it's like I'm always on guard talking to like, you know, whether it's a supporter or a fan or somebody that is in the industry that like, you know, I don't know. It's like, I feel guarded a bit, just kind of like, don't really feel like airing any of that kind of stuff. You know, I've always been kind of cautious about that.
I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah.
You were mentioning about, not being sure about starting another band because of kind of your, you know, your sort of what you have going on in your life and your routine, I guess. And a big thing you have going on right now is Downright.
Yes.
Which is, well, why don't you explain exactly what it is for people that don't know?
Yeah, Downright is
cool. It's very cool.
I'm very excited. Downright is a platform created for songwriters and artists to be able to connect with folks you know, during their downtime, which is kind of why we call it downright, but like between tours or between albums or whatever, as a way to use their stories and their inspirations and ideas to create new original music. And it's, you know, at this point, it's kind of like, you know, non-commercial stuff. And, you know, if you want to like make it really easy to understand, it's kind of like, yeah, it's like get a custom song written, you know, like that's, right. That's one way to put it. But what we're really building towards and taking strides towards is that it's not just like, hey, I'll write you a song. It's not like, you know, Build-A-Bear. It's not just like put this, this, and this together. You know, it's more like really connecting with people who are often pouring out their hearts because they're connecting with an artist that they, you know, in some way or another feel very connected to, you know? So we have all different types of songwriters from different, you know, eras and different genres, even though it's kind of primarily focused right now in the world that we came out of, because yeah. I started the site with my buddy, Bob Nana. And for those who don't recognize the name on its own, Bob, singer of Braid and Hey Mercedes and, you know, a bunch of other projects currently. And like, you know, we're like really, I don't know, like we obviously come from a certain place. So we started with our friends. We started sure. with people we tour with. We yeah. started with stuff like that as we started to develop the concept and idea. And we launched the site around Valentine's Day in 2013 with just profiles for Bob and I. And now we're up to like over 250 artists. And there's been, you know, I don't know, close to 2,000 original songs created through the platform that are, you know, I don't know. It's like, it's powerful stuff. It's powerful because it's enabling artists, it's inspiring artists, it's helping compensate artists. And then on the flip side, it's such a unique opportunity for a fan or a supporter to be able to have a song or a voice, you know, a voice that they love or whatever, mentioning their lives, you know,
right.
their names, places, dates, stories, dogs, goldfish, whatever. You know what I mean? It's like,
sure.
and some of it can be like a bit more instant gratification, easy, like, oh, it's Valentine's Day, I want a love song. Okay, cool.
Yep.
You know, but something could be deeper than that. And we've gotten a lot of examples of some really
What's the
cool.
weirdest one? Do you listen to all the songs?
We have the opportunity to listen to them all. Now that there's so many happening, we don't listen
it's
to
hard,
all of
it's
them.
Hard for you, yeah.
And we're also like, you know, we're certainly not thinking that this is a curated service. It's not. It's not like Downright is not a songwriting service. Downright is a platform where you connect with songwriters who can make art, you know what I mean? So it's like, we're not really looking to like, I don't know. We're not looking to censor anything or to like say somebody is or is not of a certain caliber. You know what I mean? Cause it's
right.
like, it is what it is.
It's and art.
Exactly.
It's someone's art.
Exactly.
And but yes, yeah, but were there any like ones that
so
off the top of your
ones.
Mind, you are just like, what is this even?
Yeah. It's so good. Like, okay, for starters, let me say this. We have access to this you know, database where all these songs do currently exist because from a customer service standpoint, you know, we do have access to this stuff. I was looking through and I was helping deal with an order that, you know, they deleted their email where they received the song. They're asking, you know, so I go back in, I have to find it and like send it to them. And I notice that there's a song in the song bank, the master song bank, called Smack My Butt. And I texted Bob and I was like, did you know there's a song in the Downright master song bank called Smack My Butt? And he's like, no. And I was like, I don't even know if I want to look up and see what artist this is, but that's brilliant. You know what I mean? Like, it's almost better that I don't know, but it's so funny. It's
you didn't
like,
listen to it.
I haven't listened to it yet. I'm saving it for a special day. But no, there are people getting such, using the site in such unique ways.
Well, yeah, I'm sure like an inside joke between friends or something
oh, totally.
Too, you know, or I totally get it. And that's a special thing. And you say you launched that in 2013. Is that consuming a lot of your time? Like, is that kind of what you're doing when you're not performing music and not on tour?
It is what I'm doing. And I'm doing it both as a writer on the site because I'm able to get like a decently steady amount of requests where, you know, on a month-to-month basis, you know, of course, we see spikes during the holidays, but
sure.
we're not trying to be focused on the gift-giving community specifically, but that obviously is a big time for people to, like, want to
yep.
get something special
yep.
for somebody. But, yeah, so I'm working on it, you know, as a songwriter, which is great because it's, like, you know, it's some extra income, it's some cool inspiration. I've actually taken a few songs I've written and redone them and, like, you know, two of them are on my new record that came out on In Vogue last year. Like I re-recorded it with a full band, full production. It was cool.
Cool.
But then behind the scenes, yeah, it's getting, you know, more and more real kind of. It's like, and it's something that even though there's a lot of day-to-day kind of grunt work stuff, when it is something that you help build, you're more okay with that. You know what I
sure,
mean?
Sure, of course,
and,
of course.
And yeah, we're really hoping to like take a really big step this coming year with really raising the awareness, because everything we've been doing has been pretty grassroots, pretty word of mouth, artists signing up, testing the waters, seeing what's happening. And now that more people know about it, it's like this calendar year was our best yet. And like people are starting to take notice. We're starting to get some interest from, you know, other types of companies that might be interested in, you know, working together on different things. And we're kind of like, this is what we want, but it's a little scary because, you know, it's evolving, it's changing.
Yeah.
But then I remember that, like, you know, a company like Amazon, like, used to just sell books. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, things like
very
that.
Very true. Where it I'm is like, funny to think about that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's like, we're a custom song thing, but it's like, but there's more to it. It's like, this is original content. It's like, I don't know. I get really excited about like what kind of like gateway we could open into like the creation process of songs and the stories that go with it. Like I listen to a lot of like podcasts and things on NPR and whatnot. And I'm like, man, we have so many great stories here. Now we got to figure out a way to like share them without like, you know, exploiting people. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So,
oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So is it downright.com? That's right. W-R-I-T-E.
Yeah. Downright.com. And you know, it's also, like I mentioned, it's an open platform for artists.
Who are some of the most popular artists you have there that are working on songs all the time?
Yeah, some of the artists that are like doing really great work consistently, like Matt Pryor from the Get Up Kids is like definitely like kind of our, he's been our go-to guy. He was in the first batch of artists that we launched after Bob and I, and he's so like driven and good at it. Like he's really doing a great job connecting and explaining what it is, and he's been awesome. Chris Cresswell from the Flatliners has been just amazing as well.
He's a Toronto boy. I know him well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, totally. And he's, you know, part of what I love.
River Oaks played, like, the first ever River Oaks show was right before Flatliners.
There you go. So, like, and I will say that the artists that are, like, really doing a good job, it's like, we down the road, we want to help them, give them better tools to explain what this is and showcase it, but those who you can really tell are pretty passionate about the people they're writing the songs for, that are very like, they're prompt, they're responsive, they have follow-up questions, they're so into it. And when they're delivering it, you can tell the satisfaction that's there. It's not just, I mean, that's important, right?
Of course.
So like we just before this holiday, we launched Will from Cartel and he's been really great.
Cool.
And yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of artists, you know, like it's cool. And they span a lot of different, you know, eras too. You got Josh from the Anniversary, you know.
Oh, cool.
You know, folks that their fans, you know, have life occasions now. You know, things are happening. Like
sure.
Getting songs for Baby's First Christmas or getting a song for like for your parents for their 35th wedding anniversary and like having it written by an artist that you love and it's like this great like everyone is so moved by it. Or having an artist cover like your song, like if you and your significant other have a song that's really important to you guys, to be like, well, this is our favorite song and now we're gonna have one of our favorite artists do a version of it for us.
Cool.
Like how cool is that, right?
That's very cool. Yeah, I really like that. Well, people can check it out at downright.com again. And what is going on with Mark Rowe's solo stuff for 2017? What's the plan?
Yeah, so my most recent record was released by In Vogue. It's called The Wild Type that came out this past year. And, you know, I'm still working that a little bit longer as far as like, you know, performing and promoting, but I've been doing a lot of writing, not just through Downright, but also for myself. And I'm kind of trying to figure out what kind of reinvention I want to do for this next record. And I look to be out there playing, you know, probably somewhat sporadically, but, you know, shorter support tours like the one we're on right now, you know, some colleges, some festivals, stuff like that to like keep active, keep busy.
Yep.
And then see what happens because I don't know. Like I still think that like writing songs and performing songs is my favorite thing to do. So while Downright gets busier, I'm looking forward to just like being more and more surrounded by music in every facet, you know?
That's great. And do you have a New Year's resolution? This is going to be the first podcast of the year.
That's right. No.
Perfect.
Do you?
I got to get in shape. Last year on the podcast, the people listening, I had two New Year's resolutions. One was I was going to not drink for the month of January.
Yeah.
And I did it.
Yeah.
So I didn't drink for 31 days. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
And then the other New Year's resolution was to like try to get in shape, and I was going to do P90X.
Ooh.
It didn't happen.
Mm.
It was too hard. I think I bit off more than I could chew. So this year, I'm going to keep drinking.
Sure.
Absolutely.
Right.
As the Tecate is
why deny yourself a little pleasure?
But I think, I think it's time. I think it's time to get back to just feel good about yourself.
Hey, a lot of little things go a long way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Sure.
Like changing like a lot of different things by 5 to 10% goes a long way.
Absolutely,
because
yeah.
You, like you said, P90X, you're like, yeah, but it's like, whoa.
No, I've done it before. I haven't gone through the whole 90 days. I think I got through like 60 days once.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not saying that's going to be it, but I'm going to do something, and I'm going to be more conscious about my health. You know, like you get older, and it's harder.
Yeah.
And I've had 2016 was a brutal year for me, so
yeah.
I'm real excited for 2017.
Yeah, well, I am too. And you know what? Like, while you were even just talking about what you were just talking about, I was thinking maybe something that I'd like to really have, you know, on my mind and focus on in 2017 is within my songwriting to actually push myself to write for all sorts of things and to try to push what is songwriting to me above and beyond, like, you know, the way I present it, you know, like work with other artists, like write for other artists, or like, you know, like we talked about earlier, start more projects where, you know, I'm more diverse in my type of writing and what I'm thinking about. Just push myself a little bit, not to just always be in my own mind palace about like what I want to do, you know, like maybe that's something I can make happen, you know?
Absolutely, man. Well, it's really great to speak to you, and it's cool to like reconnect and do these shows after like all these years.
Absolutely.
I feel like we didn't skip a beat either. Just we're like, mm-mm. Hey, we're back, and it's been cool to have. It's been nice to have you as like a veteran guy, you know, that's done this for a while, and me kind of being a new guy. So thanks for showing me the ropes a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. No, thank you for having me on the podcast, and also inviting me out for these shows. Like, you know, I feel like we'll do it again sometime.
Absolutely, Mark.
It'll be fun.
All the best.
Thank you.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, same to you, buddy.
So there's my chat with Mark. We did it in the backstage room in New York City at Webster Hall. And he's just a great dude, super talented, super smart. If anyone's interested in getting a song written for them or for a loved one or whoever by one of their favorite artists, definitely check out Downright, downright.com. Mark had an amazing idea there. It's really cool that that's so successful. And of course, check out his solo stuff as well. But I'm going to leave you with a classic. Here's the first single Spitalfield ever put out. It's called I Love the Way She Said LA. I'm lead singer Cindy. Peace and love.